Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Hello and welcome to the Fan Experience Experience, the podcast that explores the power of engagement in football and other sports. Join me, Mark Bradley, and today my co-pilot is Juan Luis, as our guests tell us their stories and share what they've learned. In season two of the podcast, we're exploring fan engagement and other stories post-COVID. And the aim is to try and uncover new ideas to help your club, league or association, or just make you feel good about some of the challenges you've had. But obviously everybody's hope is that we prosper amidst all of this uncertainty and we emerge healthy and in good spirits from this pandemic. So I guess starting with Juan Luis, this is your first guest appearance on the podcast. How nervous are you feeling?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Well, you've got some big shoes to fill with Darren Young, not with us today, but Darren will be back soon. So in this episode, we're delighted to be speaking to Neil Doncaster from the SPFL. Neil, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you very much. Mark, I'm pretty good despite all the chaos of COVID-19. We've had a fairly lively year, like many in the world of sport. But certainly we can see the sun dawning, hopefully, once we're into the new year with the vaccine and fans returning south of the border. So hopefully we'll see some of that north of the border soon as well. So we're in good spirits and looking forward to getting back to some version of normality.
And that's our hope soon. And here in England, of course, several clubs actually had fans last night. And it's amazing how much noise, 2,000 fans can make. I should know this, having stood with 1,500 Ayr United fans in the home end this time last year and just realised what a racket a small number of fans can make, when truly in full flow. But for those who don't know Neil or know Neil from his, it's at least a decade now, I think, probably more, 12 or 13
years. 11 years.
11 years it is now. But prior to that, chief executive at Norwich City, also working at board level for the FA and the Football League, I believe I'm not mistaken there, Neil. So you've had a fair degree of experience across the football world.
Yep. Yeah, I've been very privileged to be in some senior positions north and south of the border and seen things from a league, an association and a club point of view.
We have an affection. I think a lot of people know this by the sort of messages we put out on social media, that we love football up there. I'm not going to do any of the kind of hand on the heart, Guardian style, it's the purity of the game up north. It just is fantastic. The diversity of the clubs in the SPFL is huge. We know that per capita, no country has more people attending its top four tiers than any other country in Europe. But not only that, you can go from, going to see Arbroath, buying your smoky and then getting your steak and black pudding pie, and then being able to see something of the intensity of the Old Firm game as well. So it's got everything. And for us, it's kind of the work that we enjoy doing the most. And I think when Juan Luis and I reminisce about what we miss most during the pandemic, it's trips across the new Forth Bridge, that sort of thing. Just knowing that you're going somewhere completely unique. But I guess we're all missing that. So what a kind of, we don't want to talk about some of the more kind of controversial elements that we've all had to deal with and the SPFL more than many. But what's it been like these last few months at a level of the CEO of a league of 72, of 48 very, very diverse clubs?
Yeah, 42 clubs in the SPFL. It's been tough. Clubs are clearly feeling a lot of financial pain. You only really understand how valuable something is when it's gone. Mm-hmm. And clubs have had to try and adjust to the absence of fans, which clearly has removed atmosphere from games, massively hit their revenues. And the whole thing, Jock Steen once famously said that football without fans is nothing. And we can see that laid bare over the last 9 months. But it's been a tricky time for the league. We had, like a number of other leagues around Europe, we weren't able to complete season 19-20. Scottish Government rules were that effectively you couldn't play any football over the summer, unlike in England, where they were able to complete their league season. We were not. So we ended up in a situation where we had to go to the clubs and ask them to agree to curtail the season, which over 80% of clubs agreed to do. That, of course, resulted in two teams being relegated, one from the Premiership Hearts, Partick Thistle from the Championship, and Stranraer from League One. And those two of those three teams, so Partick Thistle and Hearts, went the legal route to try and challenge their relegations. And you know, the league had to go through a pretty unpleasant experience of fighting two of its member clubs in court. Ultimately, we prevailed and the court supported what had been done by the league and by the members. But you know, not a pleasant experience for anyone involved at all. So we're through that, looking forward. And you know, we've been working over the past 3-4 months, getting the league season underway without fans. We've only got 300 fans at three of our clubs allowed. So that's Ross County, Inverness Cali Thistle and Elgin City, who are allowed up to 300 fans each because they're in a tier one area. All of the other clubs are in tier two or tier three in Scotland, and that means no fans. So I do hope that that will change. You know, it's the same science north and south of the border. And we've obviously seen this week the return of thousands of fans to half of the Premier League clubs and around half of the EFL clubs. So we are hoping that we'll be allowed fans in greater numbers soon north of the border.
Yeah, and for a league, when you're operating at a league level with such a diverse level of clubs, is it even possible to be able to appreciate the diversity of the challenges they have? You know, from obviously people are watching right now. I mean, this podcast will probably go out later in December, early January. But right now, we're hearing the news about the movement for fans to effectively take a controlling a share of Rangers. I mean, that news was just breaking in the last couple of days. But at the other end of the scale, you know, the smaller clubs. I mean, you know, Juan Luis and I spent a lot of time in Angus last year, in Montrose, Brechin, and Forfar, and places like that. Is it difficult when you're CEO of a league like the SPFL to keep both of those perspectives at the same time?
No, I think when you run a league, you have to always have in mind that you exist for the members. You're there to apply the rule book that's agreed by the members. And that can be uncomfortable at times. You know, we're just on the verge of issuing decisions that have been made by a disciplinary tribunal in respect of Kilmarnock and St Mirren for games that had to be postponed at the request of the clubs because they couldn't fulfil the fixtures due to COVID-19 within those clubs. So it's difficult. But the guiding principle is you apply the rules evenly to all. They apply to all the clubs, so you apply them evenly. And whilst that may create moments of tension with individual clubs where rules are breached, ultimately everyone respects the fact that you need a rule book and you need a body there that is role it is to implement that rule book. And you do it without fear nor favour and you apply the rules evenly to all 42 clubs.
And looking forward at the moment, there is still, I mean, I'm sure you'll clarify this for me, there is still a degree of uncertainty, isn't it, with you know, letters being written to try and engage the Scottish government in discussions about when it might be possible to, you know, open up the game to more fans. But as you look forward, is there a point at which you see that in the back of your mind? Do you have a period of time where you think, right, we're going to be, you know, working with clubs to help them get ready for that period when we're kind of approaching semi-normal?
Yeah, certainly with the vaccine rolling out really from this week and in real numbers into the new year. Then that means that, you know, we should be expecting full stadia by the summer. Of course, what we're looking for is a route map through to that point. So building up attendances over the rest of this season throughout the clubs and ultimately supporting clubs where we can to re-engage with the communities that, you know, will have found this period as difficult as football clubs have. And you know, we know that people's mental health has suffered over the past 9 months of of this crisis. We know how much clubs mean to fans. And the sooner that we can get back to some version of normality, with fans being allowed to go back to the teams that they support and back to the stadium and get back into their old habits, the happier everyone will be. I think, clubs should be enormously praised for the efforts that they've made over the past few months. Even without fans coming into the stadia, clubs have used that as an opportunity to go out to fans. And so there's been a lot of outreach programs, supplying meals to disadvantaged parts of the community. We've offered the local NHS Scotland the use of SPFL club stadia for the rollout of the vaccine. You know, ultimately, our stadia are at the heart of their communities. They're central, for the most part, to towns across the whole of Scotland, and they're well known. So we hope very much that the Scottish Government will want to take up that offer and help football be part of the solution to this pandemic rather than simply a problem.
It's remarkable what's been happening and how it's in many respects, COVID has helped the rest of the non-football world just appreciate, how important clubs are in their communities. And, we've seen some great work at, different clubs all over Scotland. But one area that I know we're both very interested in is how the clubs have taken this kind of enforced hiatus to look at the way they're going to do things in the future. Now, I know Juan Luis has a question about social media, because we've been really impressed at what the clubs are doing there. But from my perspective, I guess one of the areas, and you and I have known each other for many years, and we've been desperately trying to get the idea of engagement as a kind of a third way, on the basis that not everybody can win and grow crowds that way. And if the alternative is to discount, then that doesn't help the viability of the club either. And we've felt specifically that in Scotland, many of the the assets that many of the smaller clubs have are often hidden under a bushel. Everybody who knows the club loves it, but sometimes the clubs miss opportunities to perhaps open themselves up to the wider community. So we're hoping that this period of time might give clubs everywhere a chance to reflect and perhaps do some things differently. Now, I know that when you're fighting to stay alive and you're fighting to pay the bills, you're not going to be in a position to say, let's go and have an away day where we try and get to the soul of this club and come up with a new strategy. But do you see that that's happening? Do you believe that that's important now?
It's certainly important, Mark. No question about that. Is it happening? I think certainly there are a number of clubs that are seizing that opportunity. I think there are equally a number of other clubs that are simply, as you've said, struggling to survive and keep their head above water. And in that environment, it is very difficult to look to the long term. I mean, in football, it tends to be that long term is next weekend. And, to start getting your head around, what does this club look like in 10 years' time? What level of engagement do we need to have with the fans now to ensure that, we are a vibrant club at the heart of its local community in a decade or so? That's a very difficult conversation for a club to have internally when you are simply paddling so hard just to stay above water. But it's absolutely vital that clubs do that where they can.
Yeah, but we've seen there's a kind of a syndrome that Darren and I and Juan Luis pick up a lot, and that is that let's put it into the English perspective. Say a tier three or a tier four English club, that there tends to be a kind of an unconscious target of breaking even when it comes to the number of people in the stadium. Unlike in the States, where an empty stadium is seen as a disaster. Now, I know the culture is completely different and the context is different, but we're hoping that there'll be maybe that might change. Might be in conditions such as this and people talking about the new normal, that perhaps a club will think, right, let's actually have a plan, let's actually think about attendance growth. And I know the actual wider context is very positive, as Juan Luis is about to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one question first on social media, as Mark was alluding to. Obviously, as BBC Scotland's A View from a Terrace points out on a regular basis, the amount of social media content generated by clubs over the last few months has been astounding. The diversity has been incredible, the amount of ideas that have been generated there. And I kind of just wanted to ask you whether there was any kind of league-wide strategy to share best practice or encourage certain clubs to do certain things to use channels such as social media where fans aren't being able to generate the revenue that clubs would usually expect?
Yeah, I think that's one of the real challenges that, that leagues have, because we don't have a centralized model like exists in the States, in the MLS as an example. We have a very much a small government approach in the UK, with clubs generally wanting to do their own thing. And that's certainly the case in the Premier League, slightly less so in the EFL, where you've got the likes of FLI with a centralized website model. But in Scotland, you've got such a wide variation of scale of clubs, from Albion Rovers and Brechin at the bottom end, to Celtic and Rangers at the top end. There is a massive variation, and it's very difficult for the league to be all things to all men. So it tends to be that the bigger clubs have got far more resources than the league. I've got a very clear strategy, particularly in terms of social media, and know precisely what it is they want to do and how to do it. The challenge is perhaps for those who are less able to do it, have got less resources, how we support those. And, I would like to pay tribute to Graham and Sean, who look after our social media for us, who do their best to support clubs, particularly over the last 9 months, and ensuring that the social media output and engagement is as strong as it can be.
Yeah, with the with Chris and Michael from the SFA, with the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast as well, we talk regularly, and we've noticed that there's a confidence in the social media messaging of clubs that previously you might not have associated with that kind of progression. And Montrose recently announced a new signing by. Just the gif they used was just so imaginative and so funny and so spontaneous as well. So there seems to be a kind of a real, spontaneity of talent, emerging from the most surprising places. And I mean, I know I've been to Montrose a couple of times. I know Davey, you introduced me to Davey Byrne. So I know Davey well at the club, and it's great to see the clubs doing that. And I guess the next thing as well is that, we work in places like Estonia and Moldova, where football is not big, because the expectation is that, well, we'll get interested when the team starts to win. And I think, in Estonia, as you probably imagine, and in Moldova, the national team doesn't win very often. And the work we're doing there is helping to shift the focus of football to community engagement and actually to look at things beyond the football. Now, obviously, in recent years, Scotland at a national level has had a lot of negativity around the failure of the national team to make progress and to qualify. But as we all know, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, the magic moment happened. I mean, to be fair, they put us all through the ringer, both in the Israel game and in the Serbia match itself, which couldn't have been more typical, I guess, of the kind of self-deprecating nature of the Scottish fan. But do you see that as auguring in a kind of an era of positivity that might have benefits for everyone in Scottish football?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. It's been a bit of an albatross around everyone's neck for so many years. 22 years since Scotland were last at a major international tournament. To qualify for the Euros in the way that we did, on that fifth penalty, the David Marshall save, the absolute outpouring of emotion, particularly on social media, it was fantastic. Genuine. If you're going to qualify, that's the way to do it. It would have been terrific to qualify right without having to go through the playoffs. It would have been great to win it in 90 minutes with a 1-0 victory on the night. But to win it via a penalty shootout, there is no better way to qualify. And I think we saw a completely emotional outpouring from everyone associated with the Scottish game. And it was great to see. And I certainly hope that can act as a little bit of a springboard. You're right that football, attracting more fans to football, cannot be about purely results on the pitch. And certainly in my time at Norwich, when myself and Andy, Andrew Cullen were recruited to Norwich, the expectation was that the potential, if there was a potential for Norwich at that time, was trying to get more money through sponsorship, rather than through the gate. because you can't rely on the team being a winning team. Clearly, every team wants to be a winning team, and clearly more crowds will follow a winning team. However, you can't rely on that success. And there's certainly the success of Norwich from 1997 through to when I left in 2009, despite relative absence of success on the pitch, to treble the amount of season ticket holders and have sell-out crowds on a weekly basis. That is down to the relationship that the club was able to rebuild with its fans. It's about fan engagement, and it's about doing things differently, and everything being about the values and your behaviour being consistent. So we said we're going to be a consultative, accessible family community club. Every single thing that we did was in line with those values, and we demonstrated that our values were real. And I think the mistake that so many clubs make is that they say they've got those values, but then act in a way which is inconsistent with those values from time to time. And in so doing, they make clear that those values aren't really their values at all.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, one of the observations that we've made in football is that it's often the fans who can come closer to articulating what those values are than the leadership teams and the clubs. And, and that is possibly a result of the kind of cyclical nature of club ownership. I mean, I support a club, as you know, that changes its manager every November. We do know that we have some values around industry, hard work, community support that came through very clearly on the Netflix documentary about Sunderland. People know because Sunderland get mentioned every time in this podcast. But I remember speaking to a couple of former players of the Peter Reid era who said that they think that group of players themselves came very close to epitomising what the club stood for, but they never once been asked to take part in any discussion about it. And the thing about Norwich, and I think what you did that's for us has been a kind of a model moving forward, is that those values are best tested in times of crisis. And, I think there was a period where you, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but that you consulted very closely with Norwich fans about the an increase in season ticket prices that might apply after you were promoted to the Premier League in your time there. And I think, if memory serves me right, the fans themselves suggested that the increase be pinned to inflation, so in effect, relatively small. Whereas other clubs at the time who were being promoted with you had put a much higher premium on these season tickets when they get into the Premier League. But the result of this kind of value-based approach is that when Norwich dropped back into the Championship, I think you retained or even grew your season ticket base. Is that true?
Correct. And moreover, we also went back to the fans following relegation and said, what should the season ticket prices be? And the view was they should be increased again in line with inflation. So not only did we get relegated, we put up the price of season tickets, and yet we sold more season tickets following relegation than we had in the Premier League. And that, I think, is a reflection of the loyalty that clubs felt to the team that they loved. And so that the fans felt to the team that they loved. And we didn't ask for it, but it developed out of that bond between the club and the fans.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunity works at so many different levels in clubs as well. I think one of the things that we see is when we talk about values-led clubs, people can trot off names like, Forest Green with the ecological approach, or Lewis, the equality club that have the same budget for their first men's team and first women's team squads. San Paoli, with their kind of anarchist approach, which is... they've now changed. They're effectively for everything in San Paoli now, and they're just embarking on a period where they're creating their own strip, their own workwear, their own stuff. They're not taking a brand anywhere else because they want to see it to be for something. And in a recent chat with Daniel Lambert from Bohemians in Dublin, he was saying that one of the benefits of taking this approach is that you have something which he calls the high quality fan. And by that, it's the person who's actually buying into what the club stands for. So as a direct consequence of that, even though obviously, our hearts are broken every time we lose, we actually feel reassured by the fact that we're serving a higher purpose. And I just wonder to what extent that could be part of the outlook, that clubs north of the border have as they reemerge after the COVID period.
Oh, is there a question that, that clubs absolutely, in my view, serve a high purpose? And I think that's a worldwide position. You know, it used to be that you know, we had a lot of certainties. We had a lot of very strong ties. We had the, you know, maybe a Sunday lunch every Sunday with the family. But you know, it used to be that so many folk used to go to church. In so many respects, those conventions, those ways in which we connect with those around us, have broken down, and that's partly down to technology. And I think football and football clubs are a living, thriving manifestation of the need for people to come together, to connect, and to engage. And my sincere hope is that as we emerge from COVID-19, the crucial role that football clubs play in the hearts and minds of people worldwide, fans worldwide, will come to the fore, and that we will enter a new golden age of football, despite the challenges that COVID-19 has brought us.
Well, Luis, you've got a question.
Yeah, just one final question. There was a poll carried out recently in England which suggested that many fans were still very uncertain about whether they would attend football again pre-vaccine being widely available. Many fans being potentially concerned about health, about whether the experience would be the same as it was before. And I guess the question is, in Scotland, while you do have some clubs, as you pointed out, that do have the ability to have some fans, do you envisage there being a kind of long path, basically, towards a return to full attendances, but even kind of attendances that are reliably similar, as in the sense that there's not a big uptake in fans when fans can come back, and then that kind of drops off?
Let's see. I mean, I think it's too early to say. Certainly the evidence of the surveys that have been carried out by a number of our clubs suggests that well over 90% of their fans are willing and able to come back as soon as the restrictions are lifted, even ahead of the widespread use of a vaccine. So my hope is that any hesitancy will be short-lived, and that we will very quickly get back into the swing of things. And certainly whilst, you know, season 19-20 was heavily disrupted, and in our case curtailed, and 2021 will clearly be a unique season, being largely behind closed doors in our case, one hopes that that season 21-22 is very much back to the normality that we've come to know and love.
Yeah, and it's interesting. My friend Jim, who's a fanatical football supporter, he characterised his kind of hesitance at returning to his club by saying that, you know, I long for the time when we score a last-minute winner and I can hug the closest stranger. You know, that's how he put it. I mean, obviously, the last-minute winner bit is probably unlikely because he's a Sheffield Wednesday fan.
Yeah.
You know, but there is a kind of a large group, you know, who probably going to need you know, some support and convincing. So I think we've seen that the messaging that clubs put out and the way that fan experience then evolves, you know, you and I over the years will have seen some of the kind of passive aggressive signage that, you know, that's been left at some stadiums from the 50s, 60s and 70s, you know, and I think that's going to be important too. But I think positivity is the word, not just through Scotland qualifying, the vaccine being available, the confidence with which Scottish clubs are now using social media and other forms of communicating what they stand for, but obviously the evidence of fans actually putting their hands in the pockets, not asking for a refund of their season tickets. Would you say that the actual medium-term future looks like it might be a step up from what went before, yeah?
Well, I certainly hope so, Mark. You know, it's such a precious thing, a football club in the local community, and, you know, being a fan, now working within a league, you're not really a fan anymore of a particular club. You realise how much you do lose by not being a fan of a particular club anymore. And you know, it's a precious thing having that bond with your football club. And I certainly hope that when circumstances allow and the vaccine is more widespreadly more available across society, and people come back in numbers, I think we will see a resurgence. And I'm certainly looking forward to that.
Well, it's a nice and a point to finish on as well. is that I think one of the stadiums that welcomed fans back to the EFL last night, one of the stewards, I think one of the more experienced stewards, maybe even been a chief one, had commented that in 11 years of doing the job, he hadn't realised just how much fans bring to the match day experience. Now, I'm not sure that's a good or a bad thing to hear from someone who's been working in football for so long, but hopefully, you know, fans will now be appreciated much more. And it's been a pleasure. Listen, thanks very much, Neil. It's great to have had you on the programme. Hopefully it won't be too long before we either meet up for a beer or a curry or a chat, you know, and preferably at a match. But listen, thanks for giving us your time today. And we wish you well. I hope you stay safe, stay sane and in good spirits, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Mark. Absolute pleasure, as ever.
Well, listen, folks, that's it for another episode. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at fanexperience.co, Instagram at fanexperience.co, and of course via our website at www.fanexperienceco.com. So stay safe, everybody, stay positive, and we'll see you next time.
The Fan Experience was recorded live. See you next time.